spacious skies for amber. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Rod Utek, and we're going to be talking, among other things, about the men we have abandoned in wars during this past century. If you study the history of the 20th century, you find that the United States abandoned many hundreds of its soldiers during the First World War. They were captured by the communist forces and left there to die in Siberia. At the end of the Second World War, there were between 20 and 25,000 American soldiers who'd been in German prison camps who were taken by the Soviets to this gulag where they were worked to death. Our government knew that. They had to conceal that fact from the American people because, after all, weren't the communists our enemies? Wasn't Joe Stalin just really just another good Democrat? And what, of course, people don't understand is the same forces of darkness that dominated the Soviet Union had their tentacles right into the highest echelons of the American government. Harry Hopkins, who was the closest advisor to the president, who lived in the White House, was a Soviet agent, or at least a Soviet asset. If you've read the Verona Files, you'll find that out. And President Roosevelt's personal secretary, Lachlan Curry, was a communist agent. The communists were in key positions within our government, but it wasn't simply the communists. They were simply a manifestation of the CFR control over our society. And, of course, the communists were left in positions there so that when people began looking behind what was going on, you would always, of course, blame the communists without ever realizing that there was another force that had exactly the same goal as the communists, and that was ruled by an elite, a new world order, a new world religion. And so it was that the 20 to 25,000 American boys were left to die. And actually, when Yeltsin came to America in 1991, 1992, he even talked about trying to find out what had happened to the American boys and was told in no uncertain terms by our leaders that he was not to talk about that anymore if he wanted to get aid from us. The same thing is true with what happened in Korea. The Koreans have offered to negotiate to return the boys, and we don't want them back. The North Vietnamese have offered, they had been promised money if we allowed them, or they would allow us to depart from South Vietnam. They had been promised $4 billion, and they held back some prisoners because they didn't trust Henry Kissinger. And when Henry Kissinger refused to acknowledge to the public what he had promised, the terms of the Paris Peace Accord, why, of course, they kept those men. But they've been an embarrassment, and many times they've wanted to give them back. They were willing to negotiate, but, of course, we would never negotiate, because the last thing we want is for the American people to realize that there are evil people in Washington, D.C., who will willingly, intentionally, willfully betray your sons and daughters after they've sent them over to seas for fight for freedom, while we, of course, lose freedom here at home. Rod, thanks so very much for being with us tonight. Rod, are you there? Oh, there we are. Rod, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you so much. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in the subject.
Well, first of all, thank you, Dr. Stan, for having us. It's an honor to be with you, and I'm very, very pleased to join you this evening. I'm a 7-year U.S. Navy veteran from 1967 to 1974, and I, like so many Americans, believe that all of our POWs from Vietnam came home in 1973 at that time. However, I got involved about 10 or so years after that.
All right. How did you happen to get involved? How did you realize that we'd been lied to, that the men in service had been lied to, that there really are evil people at the highest echelons of government that will cover up and conceal from the American people the truth about the betrayal of the men we left behind?
You know, you're so right, Dr. Stan, because in your preview, you hit it right on the head. That's exactly what these men and families have been, is betrayed. And I first became interested because I talked with other activists, I talked with family members, and it just didn't seem like two and two were adding up to be four. The more I talked to them, the more I found out discrepancies, and the more I found out about the lies and obfuscation that the government was involved in the POW-MI issue, and it just snowballed. The deeper I got, the more I found out.
All right, fine. And so then you're out of the military, and you're suddenly beginning to find out that you've been lied to, and so then you begin to try to get out to the bottom of the truth and perhaps even try to get some of the men back again, as many people have, but even Ross Perot has been threatened, you know, with real problems if he continues in his quest to bring the men home.
Oh, very much so, yes. He's been a very outstanding advocate of our missing men and women and our POWs, and yes, he did have problems when he became involved in the POW-MI issue. Somebody got to him and told him, you know, got to him and said, hey, you're going to have problems if you pursue this. And I think he had to cut back a little.
He did. In fact, I talked to a gentleman. His name was Chip Tatum. We have interviews with him. Chip was an assassin for the government, and he was told to kill Ross Perot. He wouldn't do it, and so he got into real trouble with the powers that be. And eventually, of course, he was out, made a series of radio interviews, and then has disappeared, dropped out of sight. I hope somebody's living safely somewhere in the world. He may have been killed for daring to say that his job was to kill Ross Perot. And you remember when Ross Perot entered the election back in 1992 and then dropped out and then came back in later. And, of course, the reason he dropped out was because he was told that his family had been threatened. Well, I think he was threatened as well. But the American people weren't supposed to ever hear that story. And Chip Tatum paid very, very dearly for telling about it. But I've talked to a number of people who have been professional assassins employed by our government, and certainly we know the mafia has been hired by the CIA to carry out assassinations. And in fact, if anybody doubts this goes on, there's a wonderful book. It was written by General William Odom. That's General William Odom, who's a four-star Army general, headed NSA, the most secret of all secret organizations. His book, Fixing Intelligence, published last year. And where he can't, of course, tell you what's really going on because he signed all of these secrecy agreements, but he simply asked questions. Should the CIA be carrying out assassinations? Should the CIA have journalists planted in the media? Should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? That's what's really going on. But you're not supposed to know that. And if you want the exact page references, that, of course, is in our April 2004 newsletter. We'll be glad to send anybody a free copy if they give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And you can read the book, but that's the most exciting part of the book. The CIA still kills people.
Exactly.
And is never held responsible.
No, exactly. It seems like we're assassinating the wrong people. If there's the right people to assassinate, it's not true Americans.
Right. Well, unfortunately, it's the true Americans who usually feel the brunt of the wicked people working at the upper echelons of our government. There is a dark side of our government. There's a good side of our government, a lot of good and wonderful people, but they are not allowed to tell the truth. And if they do tell the truth, well, they may end up like Jack Kennedy did on that November day back in 1963. Well, tell us what you've learned, Rod, through your work.
Well, you know, the dark side of our nation, our government, I should say, our nation, we all fight for our nation, but fighting for your government is questionable. And those good people go all the way down to the very grunts, the very people that enlist, the very people that are drafted or that were drafted and probably will soon be drafted again. Here shortly. And those are the good people. Those are the people that are the guinea pigs, the ones that end up being abandoned and written off like just statistics. And what I have found out throughout the years in talking with families and others involved is that there is a continuing lie in the POW-MI issue. And it started in recent history as far back as the Allied Expeditionary Force at the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917,
right,
where we left about 100.5 men behind in Russia. And those men, some of them were negotiated for, but when the people in control there didn't get enough of what they wanted, they kept the remaining men. And that continued throughout World War II, where we lost approximately 78,000, and many of those were taken from the Stalags in Germany to the Gulags in Russia directly after the war. And that's one thing that a lot of the American people don't realize.
Well, this is all in a report, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report that was put out by the staff of the Senate, the Republican staff of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Of course, after the report was released, why, that great conservative patriot, Jesse Helms, and we all know he's a patriot and conservative because, after all, that's what everybody says, he fired his chief of staff, Jim Lucier, who'd been with him for 21 years, and the entire staff of that committee, for daring to put the truth out. But we have that report that's been suppressed for so many years. We call it the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report, or the Helms Committee report. It's available, and you can read the documentation that came out. It cost the men their jobs in government to get the truth out, but the truth is there. That's the Helms Committee report.
One of the leaders in the Defense Department of Missing Personnel, Millard Peck at the time, resigned because of what he was finding out. With people hiding the POW issue, and that was back in, I believe, about 1991, 1992.
That was Colonel Peck, wasn't it?
Colonel Peck, right, yes, right. Colonel Millard Peck.
And, of course, there have been a lot of people who've tried to get it out. General Tai was in charge of the Defense Intelligence Agency. He tried to get the information out, and but, of course, he was blocked at every turn and attacked by the media, and his revelations were simply suppressed by the controlled media. So how can they do these things in America? Well, if you control the media, why, you can control exactly what the American people think and believe.
Exactly. You control the media and you control the apathetic public. The public is only going to believe what the media tells them to believe, and they're going to go on willy-nilly, believing whatever comes out. They're not going to hear the truth like they hear on your radio program, Dr. Stan.
Well, we hope we can keep putting out the truth as long as God gives us a breath. And anyway, tell us what you have learned, because you've been in this battle for quite some time, haven't you?
Oh, yes. Probably since the mid-80s, when I really got involved, and when we moved here to Colorado, I got involved with a group called the Colorado POW-MIA Coalition, and a great group of people who consisted of family members, some retired military, some people who were in the military, didn't retire, but got out, and just other common citizens who got involved and say, hey, enough is enough. And I've been dealing with family members especially who have been lied to by the government, who have received what they thought were their loved ones' remains, when in essence they were either animal bones, aircraft parts, or the bones of Asian people.
What a cruel hoax of this whole thing of going after the bones. They don't want to bring home the live POWs who still are there, both in Korea and Vietnam.
Excellent point, Dr. Stan, and that's what a lot of POW groups are most upset about. They can bring back bones all day because bones don't talk. Live men will talk. There are live men in Korea, as you said. There are live men in Southeast Asia. There's live men right now in Iraq. And the government won't bring them home because they will talk. And they'll tell the stories. The only POW to come out of any real consequence was Bobby Garwood in 1978-79 time frame. And what did they do to him? They court-martialed him and convicted him of being a collaborator.
We have actually a wonderful four-tape set of interviews with Bobby Garwood and the people who knew him so well and had studied his case. It's called One Man Returned, or Only One Returned, mm-hmm. And the Bobby Garwood story. And as he was told by the commander of the communist camp when he was being sent back to America, you'll be sorry you ever go home, because, of course, they will destroy you when you get there.
Sure.
And because the communists were working closely with our government, the last thing that our government wanted was Bobby Garwood to come home and tell about all the POWs that he had seen there. So they had to discredit him. They had to silence him in some way. And so they had trumped up charges and phony trials. And they will do this. And then, of course, he did go to prison for a time. Eventually, he got out. But, of course, he was never given his pay for all the time that he was a POW. But the biggest thing was to discredit him so the American people would never hear his story. That's why our four-tape set, One Man Returned, or Only One Man Returned, is so important. But, of course, this is the sort of thing that doesn't get much play.
Exactly. And whatever you think of Bobby Garwood, while he was a prisoner of war there in Southeast Asia, he did what he had to survive. He did see other POWs there, and he did bring back that valuable information. And you're right, that is why he has been ostracized and silenced, so to speak.
So what is happening with the POW families? I have always had a feeling that a lot of these organizations have been sort of infiltrated and neutralized. Is the one you're working with still effective and getting the word out? And how do you get the word out where the media is doing everything they can to keep the truth from coming out?
I think one of the best groups involved in the POW issue is the National Alliance of Families. And there are many others around the country, and I can certainly give many examples. The National Alliance of Families consists of a lot of people who are family members, who have been there and done it, so to speak, who have worked with the government and have known what the government has told them. And once again, that's the National Alliance of Families, and they're headquartered there near Washington, D.C. Lynn O'Shea is the New York State Director, and Dolores Alfond is the director, and she is also a family member. Her brother was brought home here just about 2 years ago this month to the Air Force Academy, and his remains were buried. His remains consisted of approximately a third of a tooth and some bone fragments which weren't even identified as him, and a dog tag which wasn't even made out of material that dog tags were made out of at that time. So they know very much so what the government can tell them, what the government can say, here is the remains of your loved one, that's it, case closed. And so the National Alliance of Families is very active and very influential. And one good thing about the National Alliance of Families, among many, is the fact that the information that they post on their website is very accurate.
Well, the thing that really bothers me is we have these congressional or Senate investigations, and then they are totally suppressed by the media, and all you ever hear is the conclusion, no POWs. And certainly one of the most disgraceful of all of those was the John Kerry Committee, the committee headed by the Democrat candidate for the presidency, John Kerry. Do you know anything at all about his investigation of the POWs?
Oh, very much so. That was back in the 1991-1992 time frame, and many, many articles have been written about him, including a great article by Sidney Schoenberg called When John Kerry's Courage Went MIA, talks about exactly what he did during the Senate Select Committee. Now, as everyone knows, he was the chair of that committee, and that committee also included people like John McCain, former POW, and a couple of my heroes. At the time, he was Senator Smith from New Hampshire and also Senator Grassley from Iowa. And Senator McCain and Senator Kerry ramrodded that committee. They didn't allow a lot of testimony. They shredded documents and purposefully didn't allow a lot of information to tell the truth, not only about live men, but about the POW issue or POWs and MIAs there in Southeast Asia.
Well, now, why would John McCain, Senator McCain, who himself was a POW, want to conceal the truth about the men who were still imprisoned by the North Vietnamese and the Laotians?
Well, Dr. Stan, my personal opinion on both of those men is John Kerry and John McCain was that they were going to be too busy making money in Southeast Asia to allow the POW issue to stand in the way. At that time, we were talking about trade with Vietnam and normalizing relations. So if they could overcome the hurdle of our missing men and women there in Southeast Asia, they could facilitate trade with Southeast Asia, especially Vietnam. And that's exactly what the Kerry family, the Forbes family, was doing at the time John Kerry was involved in those Senate Select Committee meetings, negotiating for real estate and other construction projects in Vietnam.
Well, so, I mean, the Kerry's family was actually negotiating with the North Vietnamese communist government at the time he was investigating the actions of the North Vietnamese communist government?
Exactly, and that's the information that I have. Yes, sir. And same thing with Senator John McCain later. They're both making money in communist Vietnam right now, and they're making money off of our missing Americans.
Well, we'll be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest this evening, Rod Utek, and we'll of course welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you, because remember, they're talking about starting the draft again. It may be your son or daughter or grandson or daughter goes next. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Bob Rod Utek. And, of course, we're talking about the POW issue, which most people would like to simply sweep under the rug. It's not a nice thing to think about. It's not a nice thing to talk about. The realization that there really are wicked people in our government. Now, there's some wonderful people in our government. Our form of government was the greatest government ever recorded in history. Our Constitution gave more freedom to more people than any other system throughout all recorded history. But there's always been a dark side here. It's been here for several hundred years, probably closer now almost 400 years. The first members of the Rosicrucian Order came to the United States back in 1640. That's what, about, 360 years ago, 360-some years ago. And they have been here ever since then, working to gradually take over control of our government so that America's wealth and military might be used to bring about this new world order, this new world religion. And these are the people who consider, as Henry Kissinger did, and was quoted in the book The Final Days by Woodward and Bernstein, page 194, considering our fighting men, our military men, as stupid, dumb animals to be used for military purposes. So Henry Kissinger, of course, has done everything he could through the years to conceal the truth about this issue, both in the Korean War and the Vietnamese War. And the last thing he wants was the American people to realize that he knowingly, intentionally had lied about the men we abandoned in Vietnam. After all, why, here's a man who has literally hundreds of millions of dollars at his disposal. He's a member of the board, or has been for many years, of the Council on Foreign Relations, attends the Bilderbergers meeting, and incidentally, at the last Bilderberger meeting, they asked a man named Senator John Edwards to come, and he was there just 3 weeks ago over at the very exclusive resort in Italy. And isn't it interesting that just 3 weeks later, why Senator John Kerry chooses Senator John Edwards to become his running mate after he had attended the meeting of the Bilderbergers, which was not reported hardly in any newspaper in the United States. You can read about it up on the Internet, WorldNet Daily, but the Bilderbergers is so secret that they can conceal their meetings, who attends their meetings. Ralph Reed was there from the Christian Coalition, or formerly from the Christian Coalition. So they're manipulating and using the Christians. And then, of course, John Edwards was obviously selected by very, very powerful people to become the vice presidential candidate on the Democratic Party ticket. But don't worry whether it's a Republican or a Democrat who's elected. Why, the Bilderberger candidate will certainly win the election. Well, let's get back to our special guest, Rod Utek. We're talking about the POWs, and the elites certainly don't want this information out, do they?
No, definitely not. You know, when we talked about organizations that are advocates for a POW issue, there is another organization that is called the National League of Families. However, that family is closely tied with the government. Now, it's not tied officially, but I'm telling you that the people involved there with the League of Families are very, very much in tune with what the government wants them to say. They are kind of the mouthpiece in the POW community for the government. And so, you know, you've got both sides of the coin. You've got the good guys and you've got the bad guys, too. And unfortunately, those that align themselves with the government are not out there to propagate the truth of the POW issue.
And that's the last thing they want. Hold that thought for just a moment here as our stations return. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Rob Utek. We're talking about the POWs, and if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. I'm sorry, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But it's an issue we should never forget about, because these men, and predominantly men, a few women, went overseas to fight for freedom, and they were betrayed. And, of course, as while they were fighting for freedom overseas, we were losing our freedom at home. And during the Vietnam War, we lost a tremendous amount of our freedom. Our society changed forever. And, of course, the same thing is happening today. As our boys are overseas fighting for freedom in Iraq or to bring democracy to Iraq or whatever we're over there for, why we are losing our freedom here at home in the name of fighting terrorism and progressively ever-increasing government control. They're setting up a system of spies and informants all across America to identify those wicked terrorists, whoever they may be. And all I can say is, if they're wicked terrorists in America, why is it we haven't had at least one major terrorist attack in the United States? I mean, certainly one person could derail a train, they could blow up a chemical factory. Our borders are open, the terrorists could easily come in. Why haven't we had any serious terrorist attacks since September 11th? It's almost 3 years now. And I'm not saying we're not going to have terrorist attacks. I'm simply saying that if a terrorist attack does occur, I can tell you that we are monitoring the terrorists very, very carefully. We have the most efficient intelligence organizations in the entire world. And there will not be a terrorist attack without our government knowing ahead of time. But then sometimes you need a good terrorist attack to mobilize the people behind the government and turn them against anybody who is critical of what's going on. And these are the techniques that have been used for thousands of years by people who have a different agenda. Well, Rob, you know, certainly, Rod, certainly we know that there are people within the so-called families, meeting of units across America that seem to have more or less sold out to the government. And lots of the family, concerned family members have been told, oh, well, now don't question what we're doing. There are always these negotiations going on. Why, if you question or try to bring these things out in public, why, your family members will never come home. Have you heard that sort of thing?
Oh, yes. That goes back to Vietnam, Dr. Stan. You see, that's about as far back as I go. But I've heard stories like that going back to the Cold War and the Korean War as well. That's exactly what those veterans have told us. The story remains the same regardless of what war it is. The families of our missing are told not to talk with anybody, especially not to talk with the media, not to talk with other families, and this way they can control them. And this goes on today in Iraq. And we all know who we're talking about there in Iraq. I don't need to name names, but the government's policy remains the same. They tell the families to be quiet. And exactly, that's the wrong thing to do, because the more these people are known about throughout the world, that's a better guarantee of those people remaining alive.
Whatever happened to Spiker, Commander Spiker, who was shot down during the first Gulf War? The government immediately declared him POW, pardon me, dead, although they knew he was a prisoner of Saddam Hussein's, and there's a great deal of evidence he was a prisoner for many years. Was he taken off to Russia, or whatever happened to him?
Well, according to the best recollection I have, and I'm going on a book written by Amy Yarsinsky called No One Left Behind, very good book about Captain Spiker. He was shot down on the 17th of January, 1991, and immediately the next day declared killed.
And they knew he wasn't killed.
They knew he wasn't killed because they never did a search and rescue. Not one search and rescue. It wasn't until the mid-90s when a trader brought in pieces of an aircraft that they finally investigated and said, hey, we found a crash site, and that was his crash site.
I understood that they found his neatly pressed uniform at the crash site. Was there any truth to that story?
Yes, they did find his flight suit, and his flight suit, I believe, if I recall correctly, contained two small drops of blood, none of which indicate major trauma that would, you know, indicate death. Now, that flight suit was examined by, I believe, the DPMO, Defense Department of Missing Persons, and sent to the FBI. But then, at that time, that flight suit was mysteriously lost. So we don't have that flight suit, to the best of my knowledge, any longer to examine. But his flight suit was in good condition. The only thing that I understand was wrong with his flight suit is somebody had cut the patches out of it.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Rod Utek, and we'll certainly invite your calls here at Radio Liberty. If you have a question or comment, our number, remember, is 1-888-24 Liberty or 464-8295. This is a subject which we must never let die, because the next person who is less abandoned by the wicked people in government could very well be your son or your daughter or your grandson or your granddaughter. Don't think it can't happen. It's happened in the First World War, in the Second World War, in Vietnam, in Korea, and I fear it will happen again many more times if we don't speak out. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Rob Utek. Somebody had called in and asked if you knew anything about that some of our soldiers, some of our men who were captured, were used for experiments by the enemy.
Well, that goes back to World War II, of course, when, you know, the Japanese had the infamous Unit 731, where they did medical experiments and other experiments on our POWs. I know that the Germans did as well, and that continued in the Korean War, when a lot of our POWs were taken into Russia and China and experimented on using mind control drugs and other drugs and other medical experiments, including such things as amputations without anesthesia. And there's a beautiful description, I shouldn't say beautiful, that's really a bad word, but there's a perfect description in Joseph D. Douglas's book called Betrayed. And if anybody wants a good accounting of our POWs and some answers in the issue, the book called Betrayed by Joseph Douglas goes into that in depth.
It does. In fact, we carry the book Betrayed. In fact, I spent the weekend before last with Joe Douglas at a meeting in Southern California. He gave his talk on, how they used American prisoners to determine the various responses to various drugs. And, of course, after they were used, many of them were killed. Many of them were sent off to Siberia, their minds destroyed. The story is an incredible one. It's in the book Betrayed. We recommend it to you. In fact, we hope to have Joe Douglas back as a guest here in the near future to go into this in more detail. I think it's such an important issue, and I appreciate somebody asking the questions. Yes, all the evidence shows that they did use our boys for experimentation. Our government knew that. They did nothing about it. There's a book out there by a man named Brown called Moscow Bound, telling about the boys that were sent from Korea and from Vietnam to Moscow and then into the Russian scientific community, where they were used as human guinea pigs. Our CIA knew it, the DIA knew it, high officials knew it, but of course they had to suppress that information from the American people. That information was so important to learn how to use drugs on Americans. And somebody asked if we got hold of the information. Well, it would certainly sound from Joe Douglas, we know exactly what they did. They just don't want the American people to know that we provided the guinea pigs for their experiments. So if you're out there in the listening audience, again, our telephone number, we'd love to hear from you, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Rod Utek. The book he's referring to, Betrayed by Dr. Joe Douglas. You really need to get it and read it and weep. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and if you're out there in the listening audience and you have any question about what we're talking about, you agree or disagree, you may like to hear this sort of thing talked about, because I love my country. I do what I do because I want to reclaim our country and preserve it as a beacon of freedom. But unfortunately, there are wicked people who have ascended to the peaks of power in our military and in both of our political parties. And there are wonderful military people out there, like General William Odom, whose book, Fixing Intelligence, tries to let the American people what's knowing going on. I wonder how many people heard any book reviews of that, or of Joe Douglas, Dr. Joe Douglas, and he spent 30 years working in government and the military intelligence, and his book, Betrayed. Have you heard about it? Has he been interviewed on CBS or NBC or talked about by Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly or Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw? Of course not, because they focus your attention on the things they want you thinking about rather than on the things you should be thinking about. Henry Kissinger's opinion that the military men are stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy purposes, and I suppose he wouldn't object at all if they were experimented on, as long as they were somebody else's son or daughter. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call if you have any question or comment. Well, Rod, you know, what can be done? You've been at this for a long time, and then the families keep doing the same thing over and over again. It's said that the closest thing to insanity is if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect to get a different result. Unless we change our approach, nothing's going to happen.
We have to keep active, and it's through programs like yours, Dr. Stan, that people out there are, number one, getting aware of things like this. There's somebody out there that's listening and say, hey, I didn't know that. How can I help? Well, they have to get out of their apathy and get into action. They have to get out there and do something, whether it's simply waving a flag, a POW flag, talking about the issue, or getting involved with your congressman, perhaps, and let them know that, hey, we have not forgotten these men and women. We've got a PFC over in Iraq right now, PFC Maupin, who has been missing since April 9th. They said he was executed, and they can't seem to confirm the tape. So what indeed has happened to him? Now, we have tried to get a support group going to flood his congressman's office with calls and say, hey, we here in America have not forgotten Private Maupin. In fact, I started a little theme. You heard of Saving Private Ryan. Well, I started one called Saving Private Maupin. People have to get involved. People can't just sit by and let somebody else do it for them. They have to personally get involved. They have to get educated, and then they have to do something about it. And certainly listening to programs like yours is one way to get educated, because that's where you get the truth.
And I think the thing is that you need the facts, the documentation, or perhaps that Senate Foreign Relations Committee report, the Houghton Committee report, just showing it to others and ask them how they feel about having their children go off to war. If they are captured, it may very well be that they will be abandoned, as has happened so often in the past. And I think that this is the thing that we have to do, is let people understand the draft is coming back. It's only a matter of time. They're going to have the draft reinstated. They're appropriating money. They're setting up the draft boards. They're staffing the draft boards. Why are they doing that if they're not planning to reinstitute the draft? They're going to have the cannon fodder for the coming wars. And tragically, this is where we're headed. Well, we've got Theodore calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Theodore. I haven't heard from you in some time.
I've been listening. I just got to be motivated to call in and take up people's time.
Okay, fine. Well, good to hear from you. What did
you
want
to
say?
Yeah, great program, and I just wish I had materials to go down to the local recruitment center and hand out this information, because it's, you know, it will stop. I'm sure it will stop young men in their tracks to know.
Well, you hit it right on the head, Theodore, because that's what's important. Red McDaniel said when he came back from Vietnam, former POW, you know, I thought I might die for my country. I thought I might be wounded, but I never thought I would be abandoned. And those young men and women going in the service today, going in for their college money or for whatever reason they're going into, are not aware that they will be abandoned. They will be used as guinea pigs, test subjects, and then abandoned.
Truly, and the question actually that I had, or the observation, and it's both, because you may have some information, is I have to assume that our government is also taking prisoners of war from the enemy countries and doing the same thing with them, because, you know, we are, you know, we do experiment on people, and our government not only abandons people but exploits people. So I'm curious if there's any information about places that our prisoners of war may be, you know, held on to and also experimented on and used in mind control as well to create sleepers. You know, what they do, we do. We're mirrors.
Exactly. You know, that came about very popularized in Korea with the Manchurian Candidate, where mind control drugs are used on prison POWs. And so forth, and there's no doubt that our government has used that as well. However, I would say this, that I think if our government was testing subjects, they were testing Americans more so than the enemy.
Well, if they're willing to test Americans, you can bet they're willing to, and that's what I suspect over in Guantanamo, is that mm-hmm. they are doing mind control on some of these people to go back into the Arabic countries and become, you know, seeds of chaos within those countries as well, and I think that's a lot of what we're doing with our prisoners of war.
I wouldn't doubt that one bit. We did that in Vietnam with the CIA operations there, and I wouldn't doubt that we're doing it in Iraq right now.
Truly, truly. So it's really all that consciousness that we have to stop in our country, their country, so good men can rise to the top like Dr. Stan.
Exactly, well. And you know, you're right. Educating our young people is the first step, because if they realize that, hey, suppose they gave a war and nobody came, maybe that's the first step.
Well, and definitely to take this information to those centers. I'm more of an activist-minded, but, you know, people do all kinds of civil disobedience, and I think their energies would go further if they actually just went out to recruitment centers and nicely handed out this kind of information.
Well, one of the great things we have is the Rockefeller Committee report put out by the Veterans Administration, and you can get a copy of that and run it off on a computer, pardon me, run it off on a copy machine, which is what we do.
Right.
And basically it tells how they've experimented on hundreds, well over 100,000 of our troops, and probably hundreds of thousands of the troops and civilians without their knowledge or consent. And here's a well-documented report. Of course, it goes into the Gulf War syndrome as well, but pointing out all the macabre experiments they've done in the past, and it got about one day's coverage in the newspaper, which is how I got the report. And then, of course, I talked to, you've heard me tell the story, I called the U.S. printing office. I wanted to buy the report, and they only had 35 copies. That's all they printed for this entire nation of 275 million people. They passed them out to the members of the committee, but for the general public, they had 35 copies. That's all they printed, because they were just so expensive to print. We can run them off on a computer, you know. This is not because they're so expensive to print. They don't want the American people to know about these macabre experiments. Theodore, I would suggest, though, that in Vietnam, when we, of course, took prisoners, we separated those who were hardcore communists from the anti-communists, and they didn't want to go back again. They weren't being mistreated. They didn't. They hated communism. They were actually released. Sigmund Rhee ordered the prison camp doors open, and they all escaped and escaped into the community. Otherwise, we would have sent them back, to die in communist China and Korea, because that's exactly what we did after the Second World War to the Russians. The idea was you either die fighting or we will kill you. And there is no escape. And to make sure that the people would lose all hope, why at the end of the Second World War there was something called Operation Keelhaul, where the United States, Great Britain, Canada, and Europe rounded up 6 million Russians who had either defected to the Nazis or had been taken prisoner by the Nazis and sent them back to be executed. And the fact that they've been able to suppress that information for all these years shows how powerful their control is. It was known as Operation Keelhaul. Operation Keelhaul, there are a number of books written on that, The East Came West, The Secret Betrayal, a book by Epstein called Operation Keelhaul. Interesting, if you're out there listening on this, try to get the information on that. How could you cover up the sending back 6 million people to Russia to be killed after the Second World War? Well, you control the media. And I think that was one of the things that got my attention 42 years ago when I heard of Operation Keelhaul. I checked it out, and I found it was really true. And there's not one in 1,000 or 10,000 Americans who knows that. But, you're right, Theodore. We've got to get the American people thinking, and God bless you for everything you do.
Well,
I hope
you'll
be at our conference
on
November 6th this year.
November 6th. I'll write that down.
God bless.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, fine. Thank you so much. And anybody else out there, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And let me remind all of our listeners that we are having a day-long conference here in Santa Cruz. It will include lunch on the 6th of November, and it'll be a good time. I hope everybody out there in the listening audience can come. Of course, we can only seat about 250 to 300, so if everybody came, why would it be in trouble? But I hope many of you will give serious consideration to coming, and because this is another means by which we have of getting information out, information you're not going to hear. The regular channels will run. How do the members of the families feel? Do they realize the betrayal of their loved ones?
Oh, very much so. Some of the families, of course, want that closure, so they were going to accept, just out of sheer desperation, accept government closure on what they get back for their loved ones. But some of the families still question that, and I respect that. I think that's honorable because they haven't fallen for the government lies. They haven't fallen for the tricks that the government used. And they continue to use that to do that up until today. And they will continue as long as we have POWs. They will control it. For an example right now, PFC Maupin in Iraq was listed as missing captured. However, he is a prisoner, and that is a war. That makes him a prisoner of war. Regardless of what you call him, he is a prisoner of war. But yet they changed the name, even so subtly. You know, and that confuses people, that it changes the meaning and so forth, but he is a prisoner of war. He is missing right now because nobody is sure if he's even alive. But until he comes home, he was last seen alive. And that's what people should remember. He was last seen alive, just like Captain Spiker. It's just like your husband, your wife, your daughter, your son. When they go off to school or work, they were last seen alive. That's why they're important. That's why you should consider them as such. And until the government brings back conclusive, honest proof that you will accept, they are still alive.
Well, I think it's so interesting that, of course, you know Bob DeMoss, who we've had on our program.
Oh, boy, his nephew's got an excellent video coming out.
In fact, we're looking forward to getting a copy of that. But, you know, he was, you know, well aware that there was his brother was alive. The government knew he was alive, but they had him listed as dead. And he eventually, of course, got a public hearing, a public trial, where the government finally admitted, well, we've known he was a POW all this time. And this was, what, 40 years later? Something like that.
50 years, yeah, going back to the Korean War.
Right.
His brother Roger was headed to the repatriation point, and his vehicle turned around and headed back into North Korea. Now, he was alive. He was seen in the camps afterward. And Bob has fought for him for these 50-plus years. Despite what the government has tried to do, they admitted he was prisoner, then they denied it, and then they admitted it again. I mean, it's this constant back and forth that wears some family members down. But God bless Bob Dumas. They haven't worn that man down.
And, of course, the thing is that they threaten people who are involved in this, the people who are going to testify. They will threaten them. They will, if they're in the military, they'll threaten, or have been, they'll threaten to take away their pensions. They'll threaten their families. This goes on in America today.
Exactly. You can go back to 2003 at the Battle of An-Nasiriyah in Iraq, when some of our men and women were taken prisoner, and they actually saw firsthand other Americans executed right there, and yet they cannot talk about it.
And war is a terrible, terrible thing. And, you know, General Sherman had said to Well during the Civil War, war is cruelty and you can't refine it. And yet, of course, our leaders are always willing to send our sons and daughters out to fight in wars, but they always lie to us while we're there. I mean, we were attacked on September 11th by Al-Qaeda. So then why did we go to war with Iraq? This was not an Al-Qaeda center. I mean, certainly we let Al-Qaeda, we let Osama bin Laden, we let out Dr. al-Zawahiri, let Sheikh Muammar Omar, whatever his name is,
right,
who headed the Taliban. We let them all escape.
You know,
why? Because we had to have them escape so we could justify going to war with Iraq. After all, if we'd taken out Osama bin Laden and the others right away, how would we have justified continuing this war against terrorism?
You mentioned that earlier in the broadcast, Dr. Stan, that we needed a catalyst to get involved in here, and September 11th was that catalyst, and that's the real similarity between Pearl Harbor and 9/11, was we needed a catalyst to get into the war, either against the Axis powers or against terrorists. And whatever terrorists that we claim are terrorists, 9/11 was that catalyst to get us involved there. Unfortunately, we knew that some people had to die, and our government had pre-knowledge that something like this was going to happen, and they were sacrificed.
And, of course, it's so difficult for the average American to believe anything could be that evil, but people do not understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield. Until people recognize the evil that's out there, they can't understand anything that's going on today. And our plea is, get the information. We have certainly the book Betrayed. We have the 4-tape set on the men we left behind. We have the Helms Committee report. We have the story of Bobby Garwood, One Man Returned. We have Vietnam, the untold story. We didn't go to Vietnam to fight communism. We financed the North Vietnamese indirectly all during the war to keep the war going. How could a little country the size of the state of Mississippi fight the mightiest country in the world, the United States, for 10 years and the mightiest country loses the war? Do you think that really happened by accident? Well, you need to, of course, get our material and just think about it. Use your intelligence and understand it's all a scam.
You're right.
A gigantic scam to change America, and that's what they said, at least among the elite. They had readily talked about it, and you can read an article It's in Foreign Affairs magazine, which is the theoretical journal of the elite that rules America, the theoretical journal of the Council on Foreign Relations, January of 1967, the article written by McGeorge Bundy, member of Skull and Bones, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, friend of Henry Stimson, the Secretary of War during the Second World War, member of Skull and Bones, and member of the Council on Foreign Relations. They were two friends. In fact, they wrote a book together called On Watch. And McGeorge Bundy, who was a man primarily involved in getting us in Vietnam, laid it all out there in the January 67 issue of Foreign Affairs magazine, why we were in Vietnam. And it was not one word about defeating communism. So what's your take on it, Rod?
Well, you know, my take on all of this, and you've made some very good points, it takes people getting involved. It takes people ordering your tapes, ordering your books, and reading and getting aware or getting involved through that awareness. That's what it takes, number one. And, you know, you've got to keep an open mind on whatever you see in the, as we call it, the mainstream media, because it is so programmed by the government. Probably the only thing that they can't adjust is the sports scores or the weather. Everything else is, and I'm not even sure about those. But people have to get involved, and that's my take on that. You know, you talked about that the project where people were used for guinea pigs, chemical and biological warfare, and I have firsthand knowledge of that because that was Project Shad that I was involved in. And I know that we were told that the Russians were performing chemical warfare experiments, and they wanted to test us to see how far it was going along, when in actuality it was our own government. So, you know, people have a lot of reasons to be afraid of things that might happen to them when they go in the service, not just getting killed or wounded or even becoming a prisoner of war, but also the fact that you will be a guinea pig without your knowledge or consent.
And, of course, they're right now, of course. They're using the chemtrail spraying. You know, that's a massive experiment on the American people. I think that they're probably one of the best sources, brief to the point, well documented, is the Rockefeller Committee report. It's basically a report from the Senate Veterans Administration, published back in 1994, laying out much of what we've told you, going into the evaluation of what the Gulf War illness was all about and why it was contagious, and why 40% of the wives of the sick veterans themselves were sick. You see, we brought the disease home. And now
right.
We call it chronic fatigue and certainly fibromyalgia. Now, we had it before then, but from exactly the same cause that now, of course, is so prevalent across America. And you, too, may become a victim of the disease we brought home, part of a vast experiment on the American troops. They were sent off over there, and they were simply experimented on. But that's an entirely different story. It's time the American people understood that if we don't take America back, then we will all eventually become victims of the evil that permeates so much of our society. Well, Rod, what is the parting thought you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight?
I think it's the theme that we've talked about all evening, Dr. Stan, and that's that people have to be aware. Number one, they have to, as I've mentioned, get out of their apathy and get into action. That's what it takes. You're not going to get it done by letting someone else do it. You have to get involved, and it's not difficult to do so. You have to get involved with your congressman at the very least, to at least be able to say that you're doing something. You have to take the time to read the books, to listen to the tapes and so forth, and then do something about it and say, no, I will not take these lies anymore from our government. And you have to put your voice where it counts. If it's in the ballot box, and I don't know how valid that's going to be for very much longer, but you have to do something, at least inform these district of criminal people that you're not going to stand for it any longer. It takes awareness, and then it takes action.
Well, God bless you for everything you're doing and for trying to help us get the word out across America. And of course, did you have a chance to listen to our program there every morning in Colorado at 8 o'clock?
Well, unfortunately, I work at that time, and I don't have the luxury of listening to it, but boy, you've got a lot of followers out here, and a lot of people appreciate what you're doing, and boy, God bless you for all the hard work you've put in, Dr. Stan. I've heard your program before, and I've recommended it to everyone that I can.
Well, God bless you. Pretty appreciate it, Rod. Thank you for what you're doing, and I hope maybe we can get you onto some of our other programs at a time when you're able to come. God bless. Thanks for everything you do.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs, who believe that we are involved in a spiritual battle, to help us as we, 5 hours every day, by radio and shortwave, internet, and satellite, are reaching an ever larger audience. Now, you can, of course, go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And if you have nothing to do, you can listen 5 hours a day. And, of course, we're on the American Freedom Network, first thing in the morning, and then the Genesis Network in the afternoon. Part of that's on Radio Liberty, and then the Radio Liberty program in the evening. We have a number of archives there, and of course you can link to the Genesis Network and the American Freedom Network from our website, or at least other website addresses are there. And so we hope that you will do that. We hope you'll tell people about our shortwave programs, where we can be heard 4 hours a day for people who don't have the luxury of a computer or frightened to death by a computer. And of course, this program is being heard on shortwave across America. And our job is, of course, to educate the people, to provide the information that we talk about. You can go to our website, and you'll find, of course, we mentioned the Rockefeller Committee report and the Helms Committee report. And, of course, you need to get the government reports, the government documentation on so much of what has gone on in the past, the macabre experiments. You need to hear about the chemtrails that they're using. And it's a massive experiment where they're spraying the atmosphere in the name of controlling global warming. And we'll give you the references to the government documents and some of our more recent tapes with Inca and with William Thomas. And we're going to be doing putting together another 4 tapes. We have an excellent 4-tape set on chemtrails we recommend to you, and then we'll have the chemtrails update. And if you want to get my interview with Inca, that's I-N-C-A, I believe it is, she has all of the information and where you'll actually find the government documents telling about this experiment. But what about your health? They're not interested in your health. They're interested in, well, maybe they're interested in feeling that there maybe really are too many people in the world, and if there weren't so many people, there wouldn't be so much global warming. Maybe that's the solution to what's going on. Could there be people who really are totally evil and depraved? And I believe that there are, and I believe our job is to expose people to an understanding of what's happening. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. You can get the book, or the video, or the audio tape. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, certainly our April newsletter has references to the book I mentioned by General William Odom, where he talks about the CIA assassinations, the CIA with journalists in the media, the Department of Defense collecting dossiers on you. Our May-June newsletter goes into who is Osama bin Laden. Why was it that after the President of the United States ordered the CIA, not once but on 2 occasions, to kill Osama bin Laden, that the CIA refused to take out Osama bin Laden? Why would that be when they'd already killed so many Americans? Or is there another agenda behind what's going on today? Well, you'll be glad to send you a free copy of one of our newsletters, or the May-June newsletter. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. We also ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle 5 days a week. And we hope that you'll tell others about our programs, about our internet programs, about our radio shortwave programs. And then, of course, until tomorrow at the same time, we'll be back on this same station. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
skies for amber waves of
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here, not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We're going to have with us this evening Charlie Peters. And Charlie has been on the front lines of what's going on as far as the smog sector is concerned, the MTBE, when they put it in our gasoline to purify our air. And, of course, what it did was contaminate our air and contaminate our water. And it was a debacle, but isn't so much what the government mandates really a debacle. And, of course, now they have all sorts of new ideas. We're running out of oil. There's not going to be any oil. Peak oil, Hubert's Peak, or something of the sort. And that's why we have to go into the Middle East and kill all those people, because we've got to have the oil. After all, the whole world's economy runs on oil. If America doesn't dominate the oil because we're running out of oil, why, of course, we'll become a second-rate nation. And I would like to suggest that most of what you've been told about the shortage of oil is a total fabrication. They have, of course, done everything they could to block the development of alternative energy sources, specifically nuclear energy. Why? Because they want the problem. If they don't have a problem, how can they come up with a solution? And now, of course, we're going to move into the hydrogen economy. And the new courageous conservative governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who incidentally was taken by longtime Democrat Warren Buffett to England to meet with Lord Rothschild before he was selected to become the next governor of the state of California. And, of course, his budgets are far bigger than Gray Davis's ever were. But the governor, Schwarzenegger, who is being considered potentially for running for the president as soon as we can amend the Constitution, Governor Schwarzenegger wants to take us into the hydrogen economy and have every 20 miles along the freeways of California hydrogen stations where you can fill up your car with hydrogen. And, well, there are a lot of things out there. A lot of things are happening. But really what they really want to do is control you, control your motions, control your automobile. In fact, they just assumed you had a bicycle rather than an automobile. Charlie Peters, thanks so much for being with us today.
I think I'll just listen to you. You're doing good, Doctor.
Okay, well, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, because Charlie's been an activist for a long time. How long have we been talking? Probably 4 or 5 years, anyway?
At least, yes, sir.
All right, fine. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in trying to educate the people about what's going on.
Well, I think that's really not quite what's happened. I've been trying to educate myself. I was a small businessman in Southern California, and I became concerned about a sentence that was in the Clean Air Act amendments, and one thing led to another, and so I've been trying to learn about how my government works, how things get done, how business works, and it's been a fascinating trail. And, you know, sitting here and listening to you and talking about the hydrogen economy and the oil and this and that, it's just delightful to hear. Delightful, it because there are things that are happening that are really quite simple. And what is happening oftentimes is this efforts to misinform or to give you part of the information that will indicate that the sky is falling and we have global warming and by golly, everybody's going to get sick and die unless we stop the use of fossil fuels, and how all that business effort works and who's on first and who's on second and who gets to pay and who gets the money. all becomes really fascinating to determine what's real and what's not, and that has been just a delightful process for myself, trying to understand what is going on and to try to deal with the things on the street, where it affects the public, where it affects small business, where it affects the competitive marketplace, because in my perception, there are efforts here that are whose purposes are to affect the competitive marketplace, to affect moving businesses offshore, to affect getting people working in countries where freedoms don't exist like they do here, and to control markets and to control business in ways that are not necessarily going to be very happy to the people of the United States.
And I think anybody with any average intelligence can realize it's very hard for an American worker who's used to making $15 to $20 an hour to compete with somebody who's willing to work in China for 50 cents an hour. And you don't have to be very smart to realize that it is to the company's advantage to relocate in China, where you don't have to pay the same salaries, you don't have to pay the same workman's compensation, you don't have to pay health insurance, you don't have to give people family leaves, you don't have to give them pensions, you don't have to put up with the environmental restrictions and all the bureaucracy. And in fact, I don't know why any companies have not picked up and moved off to China, because it's so much easier to produce over there. You get good quality control, and they can produce exactly the same products. In fact, many of the products we are buying today are made by American companies, but they're made in communist China, or in Korea, or in Southeast Asia. And it's about time the American people understood that this is part of a planned program to eventually destroy the middle class here in America as we intentionally ship our industries and our jobs offshore. It isn't happening by accident, it's happening by intent, and it is part of a much larger program to bring about globalization, a new world order, a new world religion. So pick the story up there from Charlie.
You're doing very well. Doctor, to say, kind of give a little idea about how some of this works. We here in California have had gasoline, say 4 years ago, that was quite a bit less expensive than today. We have holes in the ground in Alaska where they're pulling oil out, and they're running it through our pipelines and into our ships and transferring that oil by ship down here and running it through refineries, and we put it in our cars to go where we want. First of all, the oil used in California for gasoline is about 85% domestic oil. The largest resource supplying to that system is coming out of Alaska. The oil coming out of Alaska 4 years ago was bringing $10 a barrel. $10 a barrel coming out of our hole in the ground in Alaska, going through our pipeline, into our ships, into our refineries. Today, that same oil coming out of the same hole, going through the same pipeline, is going into the market at $40 a barrel. So that's a $30 improvement in net profit of our resources coming out of Alaska.
No, but I thought that was all because of the oil cartel. Isn't it the oil cartel that's responsible, those wicked Arabs? Or maybe this whole thing is nothing like we're being told.
I perceive that there is some validity that it's a lot different than the public is being informed.
I think you're absolutely right. It's amazing how it doesn't matter how ridiculous it is. If you say it often enough, people will come to believe it.
Well, let me continue with the thought that I had going there for just a moment. You've increased the net profit of our oil coming out of Alaska by $30 a barrel net profit. We've also increased the net profit of the oil going through the refineries in California by 75 cents a gallon. Okay? Now, when you add to that at least, first of all, the largest refiner in California at 4 years ago was ARCO. ARCO owned half of those oil resources coming out of Alaska, and the pipeline, and so on. Now, you throw in the little caveat that this little company came along and purchased ARCO by the name of British Petroleum, so have they in fact confiscated our resources, and are they in fact confiscating our money, and is that very possibly going offshore, and instead of going into the economy of the United States? That could very well be.
Okay, and so what you're suggesting is now British Petroleum has bought up, I know they bought up Atlantic Richfield, and I'm sure they probably bought up the ARCO as well. And so we're seeing this increasing centralization of power in fewer and fewer international corporations.
That's correct. That's correct. And ARCO also had more natural gas resources than anybody in the world, and of course now British Petroleum is the largest natural gas resource company in the world. They just formed the largest partnership on the globe producing methanol in partnership with Methanex. And Methanex is the company who has filed suit with the federal government to collect over almost $1 billion because California removed MTBE from a gasoline. And a major player there is British Petroleum in partnership with Methanex, who is running a plant that they've just started up, which is the largest methanol plant on the globe. In addition to that, I saw a report yesterday where British Petroleum is also producing ethanol in their oil refinery in the United Kingdom.
All right, by ethanol, you mean a gasoline alcohol combination, right?
No, they're producing ethanol.
Oh, they're producing ethanol.
A gasoline in an oil refinery,
okay.
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
So it has been known, it's been stated for many decades, going clear back to the 30s, that you can make ethanol much cheaper out of oil in an oil refinery than you can out of corn or bio directions. So that calls into question, we just had a large ship a few months back go down off of the East Coast, and a number of people died in that, bringing in and offloading ethanol.
So what are they doing with the ethanol? Are they adding it to gas, or are they using it for something else?
Well, the largest use of ethanol in the country is, I would assume, is for gasoline, correct?
All right, fine. Of course, this is supposed to purify the gas and make it burn better, less contamination, and I'm not convinced at all that there's any scientific studies to back that up, but it's sure great profit for the people who manufacture the ethanol.
Well, and it's also, there we have created incentives for the oil companies to use the ethanol, and of course the ethanol is a hydrogen carrier for the hydrogen economy. So we are paying the refiners 52 cents a gallon for every gallon of ethanol that they put in the gasoline. 52 cents a gallon, plus we have an import duty of 52 cents a gallon. So you've got over a dollar advantage to using domestic corn whiskey in your gasoline over using another product. We're trying to create a $1 per gallon incentive for making biodiesel.
Well, of course, what I feel is that they really want to run the prices up because it's the only way they're going to get people to cut back on the use of their car. This is a long-range plan to get us out of our cars, and since they can't do it by convincing us, because most people enjoy their cars, and one of the great pleasures they have, it gives them the mobility, the only way really around that is to make it so difficult, so expensive, that people will eventually, and especially as the economy begins contracting next year, will forego the pleasure of what they want to do, and maybe they'll just buy a bicycle like they do in Beijing.
Well, Doctor, I think that this country is a lot more resilient than any of these businesses think. They think that all of us out here are kind of dumb and not bright enough to figure out what's going on, but I don't think that's true. I think the people in this country are more resilient, more effective, and know a lot more than anybody's suspicions that we might. We have computers, we have internet, we have telephone, faxes, etc. We have all kinds of different sources of news and information, And just because they continuously are feeding us information how the global warming is just destroying the world, and it's going to make everybody sick, and it's going to stop our water supply, and this and that and the other thing, that we are all just gullible, and if they say that enough and they get enough people to say it, that we're going to buy that, I don't believe that the American people are all that dumb. And I think they're a lot more knowledgeable and a lot more aware than anybody gives credit. You don't hear those kinds of conversations regularly, but when you stop somebody and you tell them that this country has sufficient energy resources to last us 1,000 years without importing anything, and they go, yeah, I believe that. And then you say, well, maybe the environmentalists are just working for the oil companies, keeping product out of the market in order to make the price go up, and they go, well, I believe that. It's just amazing how often, and it doesn't matter where you're talking to somebody like that. It can be an ex-state senator. It can be somebody throwing hash in a local place where you eat. Just about anybody anywhere, and you say things like that, and they go, I believe that. It's just amazing how knowledgeable the public is. In fact, I think the public's a bit frightened. They're a bit frightened about laying down on the railroad tracks for fear the engine will run over them. But I think the public, primarily because of people like yourself, are coming up online, and we are not going to go where these corporate elite want us to go, destroying the middle class, destroying our ability to drive our car. We're not going there. Not going to happen.
All right, fine. Well, I think the important thing is for people to understand that almost everything that's happening is being engineered. There is no shortage of oil. How can I say that? Because we've checked it out. If you haven't heard my interviews with Lindsay Williams, you need to get them. And you need to know that I've checked the information out, and I believe it's accurate. There's plenty of oil up there in the North Slope, but it's not going to do us any good because it's going to take another 5 years, even if we started right now, to build a pipeline both for oil and a parallel pipeline for natural gas to bring it down here. In the meantime, they're going to drive the price of oil. They're going to drive the price of natural gas up. So even though people know what's going happening, why are they given a choice on our elections between Tweedledum and Tweedledee? And usually they'll take Tweedledee, but nothing's going to change, at least to the national level. And even here in California, when we had our chance to vote for a really good man for governor, and I'm talking about Tom McClintock, the people believed what the media kept telling them, that McClintock couldn't win, even though the majority actually in exit polls said they wanted to vote for McClintock, but they voted for Arnold because they knew he could win, and of course he could win, because the entire media was in behind him, as well as Warren Buffett and George Shultz of the Council on Foreign Relations and Lord Rothschild, and all of the elitists have given us a governor who's going to be probably the worst disaster California has ever seen.
Well, the one magic thing about that, Doctor, is we do, where we live is called we keep talking about this thing called democracy, which as far as I'm concerned means mob rule. And what we have is a constitutional republic. And that's where individual people are important, and that's the only solution to saving this country and making things better. You were talking about the support for Arnold. There's a gentleman who is a delightful person, who is probably the most powerful person in Sacramento, who went to work for Arnold probably about 10 years ago. And his name is Bob White. So Bob White has probably more to do with Arnold being governor than just about any of the people that you've mentioned. And he was chief of staff of a previous governor when he was mayor of San Diego, when he was a U.S. senator, and up until the last 2 years of it being governor, and Arnold hired him approximately 10 years ago.
You're talking about, of course, Pete Wilson,
yes.
The man who, of course, was in Arco's pocket.
That could be true.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest, Charlie Peters. We're going to be talking about what's happening in California. But if you're listening out across America, remember, what happens in California is going to happen throughout the rest of the world. California is the sixth largest economy in the entire world. If we were a nation, we'd be the sixth largest nation. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Charlie Peters. Charlie, you want to tell us about the hydrogen economy that's going to transform our society?
Well, sir, it's, you know, doctor, I at one time made solid rocket propellant. And we made a little rocket that was a little ground-to-air missile, and it was probably about 8 inches in diameter and probably about 8 feet long. And it burned for 0.6 seconds, and when you fired it and fired it off into the air, it would go completely out of sight before it quit burning. So a 0.6 second rocket burn could put a missile out of sight in the desert when it's clear. But the chamber pressure on that rocket was 2,500 pounds of pressure. So when you have a cylinder with a hole on one end and blocked on the other end, that device, that cylinder, goes pretty rapidly in the opposite direction where the hole's at. So that's basically what makes a solid rocket move, or a rocket move, is that it has different pressure on one end of the cylinder than on the other, and the internal pressures inside of that rocket is what primarily moves it. The current situation, if you're going to use hydrogen to put in a bottle, to put in a car, that bottle currently is being charged with approximately 5,000 pounds of pressure. So if you knock a hole in that, you get into an accident, that can get pretty funny. More than likely, that would take that bottle and put it through a steel-reinforced concrete abutment right along the freeway, just like it wasn't even there. They're now saying that they're only able to get about 100 miles on about as big a bottle as they can put in the car and accommodate, so they're considering taking that pressure from 5,000 pounds to 10,000 pounds. So if you're going to use basic hydrogen in a car, the safety issues in trying to handle that hydrogen get a little funny.
Well, now, what about the reliability of hydrogen technology? Don't they use some sort of a fuel cell for that?
Okay, in using a fuel cell, and the number one primary provider of fuel cells on the planet is a nice little company in Connecticut. And the governor there just got removed from office because they were going to remove him because of relationships with different business interests. And, of course, the number one business there is this nice company called United Technologies. It used to have a president by the name of General Alexander Haig. They are the very ones who started the centralized inspection programs, and they are the third, the third largest provider of parts to the new car manufacturing industry. So they created the centralized smog check programs to possibly confiscate the public's cars, to create the basis for being able to make a paradigm shift in energy and transportation, as Al Gore said, from getting rid of the internal combustion engine and going to fuel cells. The part where that starts to become really fascinating is that it is, what I've been told, is that what makes those pieces of equipment work is catalytic materials. So the fuel cell itself takes in hydrogen, runs it through a catalytic reaction, which reacts the hydrogen with oxygen and produces pure water and a little heat. If you're going to use something other than gaseous,
hold that thought right there for a moment, Charlie. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're talking with Charlie Peters about the hydrogen economy. That's the big thing that we're told about. Oh, we're going to do away with petrochemicals because we're running out of them. We're going to the hydrogen economy. So Charlie is explaining how the fuel cell works. And basically, you say you have some sort of a catalyst there, some sort of a metal catalyst that facilitates this process of combining hydrogen and oxygen?
Absolutely, in the fuel cell. And then if you're going to use a hydrogen carrier, such as methanol or ethanol, that also is a catalytic reaction that takes place in what they call a reformer, which cracks out the hydrogen so that you can use it in the fuel cell. What I'm told is that the primary holder of those resources on the planet today is this funny little company that we may have mentioned already by the name of British Petroleum.
But, of course, my understanding is it takes about four or five times as much energy to produce the hydrogen as it does, than it produces. In other words, it produces a certain amount of energy, but it takes five times as much energy to produce the hydrogen as it actually produces when it's utilized.
Well, hydrogen, as you said, Doctor, is just a carrier of energy. There's no place you can go out and mine hydrogen, and here it is, and so here's a source of energy. Not a source of energy, it is a carrier of energy, just like an electric wire is a carrier of energy. You got to put energy in on one end to get it out on the other end, and as you run this wire over distance, you lose electric power. It's the same kind of situation with hydrogen. It takes energy to create it, then if you're going to get that energy back by reacting it in a fuel cell or burning it in an internal combustion engine, you're going to get losses in that process, and those losses are very significant. You're absolutely right. So the energy, one of the discussions is to use nuclear power to create the hydrogen energy, or the hydrogen gas to be utilized. You can make it out of natural gas, you can make it out of gasoline, you can make it out of ethanol, methanol. Those are all different carriers of hydrogen. Or when you're in the nuclear situation, you're generating electricity and you're using that to turn water, break water down into hydrogen and oxygen, and then separating out the hydrogen for use as an energy source. But you can't go out and just go find some energy laying some hydrogen laying on the ground somewhere and take and put that to work. The fossil fuels are energies that are just sitting there that the earth has that we can pick up very cheaply. The oil coming out of the ground in Saudi Arabia, my understanding, it costs $1 a barrel to pull out of the ground. So the current situation is they're making maybe $39 a barrel gross profit out of that oil coming out of the ground. Is what it's worth in the ground versus what it's worth when you're putting it on a ship to deliver it somewhere. The profits there are potentially extremely large. And as an energy source, that's very easy to find, to pull out of the ground and put to work. And the problem with our current types of resources is that there's just too much of them. And in today's world, with today's technology, you can go out and get those resources and put them in the market. And when you do that, you're cutting the profit and you're cutting the power and profitability of major multinational corporations. And so they have to go to very interesting kinds of strategies to say that we're running out and to say that we have environmental impacts that are negative and so on and so forth, to keep the product out of the market in order to get to a point where we can make this transition to this new economy, this new hydrogen economy. And my view of that system is that you're going to go out and buy a car, and let's a fuel cell automobile, the in full production, that car, probably that the experts that I'm talking to all over the world indicate to me that the car is going to cost $100,000 and it's likely to last somewhere between 5 and 10 years, and at that point you got to crush it and get a new one. So you got a $100,000 car that lasts 5 to 10 years. The economics of that are really not very happy.
Well, of course it is if you are very, 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 very rich, but for the average common folks, why, it's certainly going to get us and force us out of cars. I would just simply add for our listeners out there, if you have any question as to whether or not there really is plenty of oil here in our hemisphere, you need to get the book, The Energy Non-Crisis, by Lindsay Williams. And I actually talked to one of the people he talks about in the book he writes about. I tracked him down. He's working in Alaska for, of all things, British Petroleum. I asked him to come on the program. He was hesitant to because he didn't want to endanger his job. But he confirmed what Lindsay Williams says. There is a oil pool up off the North Slope, north of Prudhoe Bay, where it has far more oil than they have in Saudi Arabia. But, of course, they can't let the American people know that. If they did, they wouldn't believe that we're running out of oil, and they wouldn't be willing to pay the fantastic prices we're paying. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Lindsay. It's Charlie Peters. We're talking about the hydrogen economy. Charlie, is there anything else we should get into in this far as the hydrogen economy? It sounds like the hydrogen is going to be terribly, terribly expensive, you know, and then the car is even going to be more expensive. Doesn't sound very practical to me.
I think you're absolutely right, Doctor. But there is something that I would very much appreciate being able to mention. And that is that I've been consulting with a gentleman in Southern California who was in the smart check business, in the automotive repair business, had a 10-bay shop that was AAA approved, member of the largest association in the state of those kinds of businesses, and the state of California put him out of business over a year ago, like a year and 3-4 months ago, due to an activity that had that he knew nothing about, where an employee actually frauded him out of $200, and that situation was a primary issue in an investigation that ended up putting him in front of a regulatory judge who took away his licenses, and he's been out of business. This gentleman owns his home. He is very active in his community with kids and in baseball. Is just a very proud small businessman, and we've been working on this for well over a year, and we're trying very hard to get him back in business. We have some very significant folks in the state of California that are trying to help. It's being taken to the Attorney General here in the next day or so. It's been taken to the Secretary of State and Consumer Services by a significant person in the state of California, and we're trying very hard to change this, what I believe to be absolutely egregious, inappropriate behavior, treatment of small business. And what's going on there is a situation where you have significant stakeholders, insurance companies, and car manufacturers and oil companies who don't want any service. They don't want to keep a car running. They want the car gone. So if they can eliminate the service, then and destroy the relationship between the public and the competitive marketplace service businesses, then it's very easy to transition to this beautiful, marvelous new program funded by carbon credit trading taxes to go to this marvelous hydrogen economy where you've got these hydrogen fuel stations, and this is just going to be a better world. But I don't think that the public would want anything to do with this proposed world at all.
All right, Charlie. Well, are we taking sort of a big step? We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Charlie Peters. He's talking about a gentleman he knows who had 10 repair shops in Southern California who lost his license because one of his employees did something that was wrong and improper. But don't you think that that is simply an example of bureaucratic ineptitude rather than part of the bigger picture, which, of course, is the very obvious effort on the part of the ruling elite to get us out of our cars? And, of course, this whole idea is laid out in a master plan that was put out as part of the Second Earth Summit in 1992. It was laid out in a report, 1,142 pages, called the Global Biodiversity Assessment, published by Cambridge University Press. We summarize that in our Sustainable Development Syllabus, which you really need to get because you don't want to read 1,142 pages. But we talk about that in my Sustainable Development 4-tape set. And, of course, we talk about it in my Sustainable Development Syllabus and my Sustainable Development video. And, of course, there is part of a master plan to get us out of our cars. But isn't it really taking it sort of a long step from the way this man has been treated? Doesn't this really reflect just the arrogance of bureaucracy?
Doctor, that's a very easy place to go. It's very easy to assume that people in our government are basically bad. They're just doing this for arrogant, self-serving reasons. However, I have worked on this particular case for well over a year, and in my opinion, that's not what's happening here. It is the support of stakeholders that force the removal of proud, effective businesses and support fraudulent businesses, which is completely backwards. We have a solution to that. with an auditing process that demands performance rather than demanding fraud and cheating, which the current system does, and that'll fix it. And we've got some really special people that are trying to help us a little bit, but in general, it's going to require public opinion in order to assist in moving this, Doctor. It's very easy to believe that everybody in business is basically a crook. And if you look at the behavior is not very pretty just about anywhere you want to look. But the incentives created by the regulatory oversight, where you get anybody that gets a complaint, whether you're a doctor or a nurse, mechanic or whatever the situations are, that force illusions and fraud and cheating to stay out of the way of complaints, and so you end up demanding inappropriate behavior in order to survive, and within the bureaucracy, the pressures that are there are the same that supports and promotes the people that are destructive to business and to the public, and throws out the people that try to do things that are responsible. So public opinion is the only thing that, in my humble opinion, can move that around, where we're having regulators working on performance rather than working on trying to put people in prison.
All right, fine. What are you suggesting then? What would you like to suggest to our listeners?
Well, in Smart Check, the percentage of illusions, inappropriate behaviors are very significant.
Now, for our listeners across America, this is where they check the automotive emissions. We have crazy rules here in California. They vary from area to area, and it all has to do with whether or not a car is polluting the atmosphere.
Right.
So go ahead and pick up the story from there. And then was this gentleman that we're talking about, that you're concerned about, you're championing his cause, was he involved in smog checking vehicles?
Absolutely.
All right.
And he was involved in what they call the CAP program, the Consumer Assistance Program, and that's where the state government is paying small businessmen to repair people's cars. So if you can get it done for free, now you're turning all of these competitive marketplace businesses into state contractors and destroying the rest of the market. But what happened was that it was necessary to replace a computer on the car. He had hired a manager that came highly recommended, and he wasn't even in the shop when this transpired, but his manager needed a computer for a car. He could not get a new one, so he ordered a used one from a wrecking yard. The part was delivered. There was an invoice provided that had no money on it. The guy paid $100 for the part, wrote on the invoice that it was $300, stuck $200 in his pocket, frauding the small businessman, put it on the invoice as a new part, which in fact it was not. The customer was told by the mechanic to put the part on that it was in fact a used part, and the fact that on the invoice it showed new, which the owner of the business had no idea, and as a matter of fact he got frauded out of $200. The bureau came in, did an investigation, went to people's homes trying to get complaints, ended up doing an investigation in the year 2000, did not even provide any information to the business owner until 2002. None of the employees that had previously been there were even in the facility. He had done everything he could to be the best that he could be. It went to a regulatory judge, and the judge took away his license, and he's been out of business for a year and 3 months. Where it gets even more interesting is he went to his association. His association's attorney told him it would cost him $20,000 to represent him, and he still would lose at the regulatory arena. The attorney general worked a deal with him. He could have shut his business down for a week and went back to work. He said, but had to say that he had frauded and done things that were illegal and wrong, which he had not. He said no. He went to the regulatory judge. The attorney general told him, if you don't take this deal and admit to all this stuff, then we're going to do everything in our power to take away all your licenses with the regulatory judge, which is exactly what happened. If, in fact, the regulatory judge had said not guilty, the Department of Consumer Affairs director could have overrode that immediately and said, sorry, judge, he's guilty, and taken him down anyway.
It sounds to me like it's the autocratic bureaucracy to me.
But the reason for that inappropriate behavior that has huge opportunities to improve is the support of the stakeholders that are demanding a destruction of the competitive marketplace so they can confiscate it and go to the hydrogen economy, is my humble opinion.
All right, fine. Well, under any circumstances, while we've got real problems with the bureaucracy, it sounds like this poor fellow is being taken advantage of. But, of course, when you give people power, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So this is what we're seeing, and when the Attorney General can say, you didn't do something, or you did something you didn't do, and we'll let you off scot-free, there's an awful temptation to do it. And I admire your friend for being willing to stand for rights.
Well, I absolutely do as well, but my God, it is just been extremely hard on him. He's had to borrow something like $150,000. He's got creditors after him 90 miles a minute, and he's sitting there hoping to get back to work. And like I said, fortunately, we've communicated with an awful lot of people who are trying to help. So we're hoping to get him back to work, but it's still very tenuous.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you run into the bureaucracy, sometimes, you know, pretty hard to fight him. I'm glad he's got you on his side. Well, now, what about some of the other things? Certainly, I think that this whole idea of smog checking, you know, sounds so great. You know, why, we just want to make sure we've got pure air. And yet, for years, they've allowed the diesel trucks to be out there, and these were diesels were just pouring out black smoke. And every time I'd point out that this is the major cause of air pollution, oh, no, you don't understand the definition of smog. I can remember 20 years going to meetings and being treated as if I was some sort of an idiot simply because I was believing my lying eyes instead of believing these experts who said, why, diesel smoke never produces anything at all. I mean, this this black smoke that you see belching out of this the diesel trucks, it isn't harmful at all. Now, suddenly, 20 years later, after they've got smog check and all of these other things in, most of which, in my opinion, were not necessary, they suddenly said, of course, the worst source of pollution is diesel. And most people have forgotten what they were saying 20 years ago, what I think that they should have certainly done something. Now, apparently there are new diesel engines that really do not put out the pollution that the old ones did. But, of course, they've waited because they had to have the problem so they could come up with a solution. And now, of course, they want everything regulated and controlled. And some of the people in key positions in government, the people related to the legislators, got into the smog check business, produced the machines that had to be purchased due to the smog checks. A lot of people made a lot of money on this, didn't they, Charlie?
Well, you really brought up a fascinating subject. And the question is, have you heard of Arnold's new car tax? Arnold is proposing that we've had a system that has taken the first 4 years out of the smog check program and charging those motorists $6 a year for 4 years, and that's been going into a fund at the Bureau of Automotive Repair. There's a little problem with that, though, because they've been collecting a whole lot more money than they could use. So the last about 2 or 3 years, they've taken hundreds of millions of dollars out of this fund that's generating from $6 per car per year for the first 4 years. So that was working pretty well. So we're going to go give a little bit of money, the difference between a regular new diesel motor and a new high-tech diesel motor, and we're going to use that to generate pollution credits that are more than likely going to be traded and sold to competitive marketplace businesses out here so the big guys can confiscate it. But we're going to go provide a little money to provide some newer, higher-tech diesels coming out of this fund. And so instead of now having $6 for 4 years, we're going to have $12 for 6 years, which is going to generate several hundred million dollars that they've been already taking out and putting in to balance the budget. So we are in the process of implementing a significant car tax on the first 6 years of cars, confiscating it and using it for some PAL that's producing a probably a diesel engine that won't work very well. It's going to run on natural gas and it's going to self-destruct or run it on methanol or whatever. That's probably not really a viable situation, but they're going to bat the difference between a regular diesel and this high-tech diesel they're going to use as a pollution credit that they can sell to other stationary sources. And so it's creating a big tax, ability to tax competitive marketplace businesses off of the back of the motorist who is being, as far as I'm concerned, is being taxed to balance the budget.
And, of course, the thing is that Arnold Schwarzenegger will not cut big government. He went in, promises he was going to cut big government, and he had no intention of it. He keeps hiring more people at higher salaries, and, you know, his budget is almost $10 billion higher this year than Governor Davis was. It's actually $12 billion this year more than Governor Davis's budget, and we recall Governor Davis. And it's amazing how the American people, and specifically the people here in California, cannot understand that Arnold Schwarzenegger never tried to cut back on government. He said all the right things and did all the wrong things and got credit from both sides. And what are the American people going to understand? The politicians say what you want to hear, but never watch what they say. Watch what they do.
Absolutely, Doctor.
Well, now, of course, you know, apparently there are some very efficient diesel engines, aren't there, that are very low pollution, that will get, what, 90 miles to the gallon?
There are cars available, produced, certified, that can be put in the market right now that get over 90 miles per gallon running on it with a little turbo diesel, yes.
But, of course, they really don't want that because they certainly wouldn't want us to be able to get around and not have to buy all their expensive diesel or gasoline.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
And I think the American people don't understand we're constantly being manipulated. They use the rules and regulations to create the problems, whether it be on preventing the building of dams and reservoirs so we'll have a water shortage, or whether it'll be preventing efficient cars from being on the road so we'll have a shortage to drive up the cost of gasoline. And then, of course, we can justify more controls in the name of air quality assurance. Charlie, what's the solution?
You brought up an interesting one, Doctor. Brought another interesting issue to mind. I have a friend who was a national motorcycle champion who has 50 patents on carburetors to his name, and he has the ability to take a two-cycle motorcycle and make it meet 2012 standards with a whole lot to spare. However, the big corporations, that's not where they're going. They're going to four-cycle, which is more expensive to repair, and so on and so forth. And he is currently working very hard on trying to provide products to the snowmobiles and quad fours and so on and so forth that will very significantly clean them up, at the same time improve performance and gas mileage. This gentleman has gone to motorcycle road races on world championship arena where all the major manufacturers in the world are there, and had every carburetor on the track, every motorcycle on the track running on his carburetors. And what has happened in relationship to the bureaucracies and to trying to keep his product out of the marketplace is just absolutely amazing. And this gentleman, when he graduated from high school, had a very interesting guy come and was close friends with him for several years, and that was the President of the United States, which was Harry Truman. He was good friends with Roy Rogers and Dale Evans. He used to go to their birthday parties and whatever, so this guy's been around a long time. Is nothing but a high school graduate, but he has worked diligently all of his life and developed products that give better performance, better gas mileage. His carburetor can be put on an engine that goes from 10,000 feet to below sea level, has no computer control, and controls the air-fuel mixture exactly all the way with a very simple carburetor that he's developed. And it's real stuff, and he is in the process of importing scooters and motorcycles. He's going to put these on in spite of the big businesses trying to go somewhere else. So there are people out there working really hard on providing solutions that are very effective at trying to get that done.
Now, he must be pretty old. How old is he?
He is 75, sir.
75, and he was a classmate of Harry Truman's, or?
When he graduated from high school, Harry Truman came to his graduation.
Oh, Harry Truman came to the graduation, okay.
Yes. And he formed a friendship there, and Harry Truman used to come and visit with him more than once a year for several years, personally.
Well, I certainly hope that his knowledge will not be lost, because he's the same age as I am. He's not going to be around here too much longer.
Well, I don't know about that, Doctor. I think you probably got a whole lot of left in you.
Well, I certainly hope so. But anyway, I think it's important that people know that there are other alternatives, but they're not looking for the solution. They're looking for the problem. And when you understand that, then everything begins to make sense. They never could have gotten the price of electricity up as high. We had a very efficient system. They destroyed that system because they wanted to raise the price of electricity, but they couldn't tell us that. They had to tell us, oh, no, we're going to deregulate. That's how we're going to lower prices, knowing full well the real goal was to raise them. They've done the same thing. It created artificial shortages of natural gas by insisting that all our new power plants be built to use natural gas, creating a shortage and tripled the price of natural gas. They've done the same thing with water. They're doing everything they can to disrupt our economy. The free economy works very well on its own. But of course, when you get the government regulators in there, they always come up with these impossible solutions because they do not want the solution. They want a problem. So, Charlie, what's the message you'd like to leave with our listeners this evening?
Well, there is a delusion, a significant illusion that is being promoted that the federal government is forcing us to use oxygenates in our gasoline. Somehow or another, putting corn whiskey in our gasoline that gives us less mileage, increases the pollution, costs us more money, makes it where our oil doesn't go as far. And that's what the federal government is making us do. And the fact that Arnold has no jurisdiction over the California refiners, it won't even pass the laugh test. So if there's enough public support and the official support, every person in Congress representing the people of California but one, everyone but one, and that's Mr. Filner from San Diego, who has somebody wants to grow us some sugar cane down there to make some ethanol, everyone but one has signed onto a letter demanding we get relief from the oxygenates. The resources board is there. The governor is there. The previous governor is there. So if the public becomes aware that they're being bamboozled and we're blaming the federal government for this, when in fact Arnold can go and regulate the refiners and tell them not to use that stuff and quit taking our highway money and putting it in the refiner's pocket to put corn whiskey in our gasoline, at that point, the public and whispering one to another will create the support mechanism to get that done in a very short time frame.
Because
if we can support small business so you get quality repairs and support improved performance and quality in smart check, lowering the fraud, lowering the cost, serving the public instead of frauding them out of their car, those two issues can be the basis for starting to put wheels back under California in this country.
Now, of course, they really want to get us out of our cars. That's why they're not repairing the highways. That's why we put all this money in the highway fund, and they steal it for other purposes, for alternative means of transportation, and for light rail, and a lot of things that people just don't want and aren't going to use. And this is part of a carefully planned program. They want control to chaos, and they're doing everything they can to create increasingly chaotic situations so people will carpool or do whatever they want to. It's all part of this elitist mentality that we can manipulate the common folks, and I certainly hope they're not going to be able to do it. I agree with you, Charlie. But we need to let the people understand what's really going on and that they are being manipulated, and they're sure not getting the truth from Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, Dan Rather, or Tom Brokaw.
I think you're right, sir.
So, Charlie, I really appreciate having you on. It's always a pleasure. So God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us. And we look forward to having you on with us again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you, Doctor. Godspeed.
And you too. Well, our guest this evening has been Charlie Peters, and Charlie Peters has been on the front lines trying to get the MTB out of our gas. He accomplished that. He's accomplished a great deal. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners all across America, wherever they may be, that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours every day by radio, shortwave, satellite, and internet, to try to reach as many people as we can. Now, your job is to tell other people about our program. Tell them about our shortwave program where they can hear us twice a day, and you can go to our internet site and get the frequencies, 9.430 from 3 to 5, or Pacific time, 6 to 8 Eastern time every afternoon, and then from 8 to 10 in the evening at 7.535, or on the East Coast it's 11 to 1. It's pretty late, but there are a lot of people up listening to programs even that late at night. So we hope that you'll tell others about our shortwave programs and get them listening. They're going to get information here they're not going to get elsewhere, with a perspective that points towards the real source of what's going on today. There really are secret organizations out there working behind the scenes, men of great power who are not necessarily always energized by a desire for profit. Many of these people have sold themselves to the prince of this world for money and from sex and for drugs or for personal pleasure, but of course they have adopted a program of evil. And the whole desire is really to wreck the economy of this country. That's what globalization is all about. That's what the progressive destruction of the value of our money is about. That's what the outsourcing of our jobs and of our industries is all about. That's what the war is, at least in part, about, is the distraction to keep us from realizing what's happening here at home. And as our men go overseas to fight for freedom, we lose freedom here in the United States. Let me mention again those books and tape sets we talked about in the last hour. Betrayed by Dr. Joe Douglas, a personal friend. That's Betrayed by Joe Douglas. Our 4-tape set on Vietnam, The Untold Story. Our 4-tape set on The Bin We Left Behind. Our 4-tape set on One Man Returned, the Helms Committee Report, the Rockefeller Committee Report, and of course you can get the special, which will give you actually 3 tape sets and several books, give you a real background to an understanding of Vietnam, which is a war we never intentionally fought to win. The plan was never to win in Vietnam. The plan was a distraction, to take us away from what was happening here at home. And I think it's about time people realize that a lot of what's going on over in Iraq is a distraction, to keep us from really seeing clearly what is happening here in the United States. Well, these things do not have to happen. If we could educate the American people, if we could have a revival, because if we don't have a revival, if America doesn't turn back to God, do you honestly believe that God will ever again bless this nation? And so our plea to you is, understand what this is about. Get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and then, of course, you can get all the books we refer to you. It's very, very clear what this is about. Get the 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends. Get the great new video we're carrying called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, because you'll actually hear these rock and roll people talking about how they've sold their souls to the devil, and it not just in rock and roll. Some of these people, other people have done exactly the same thing. Some of our great industrialists, some of our politicians, some of our military leaders have simply given themselves over to the dark side for personal profit here. But this one video, it's either the 4 or the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, is one of the most gripping videos I've ever seen. And I'm amazed at all the years I've been involved in this battle. I never heard of Joe Schimmel before who put these together, but you will never look at the world through the same eyes after seeing They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, and then understanding who Aleister Crowley is, that his disciples, like Timothy Leary and Harry Hay and so many of the other people of the last century, were simply carrying out his bidding, using drugs and sex and pornography to destroy America. And so until tomorrow at the same time, this is Dr. Stan saying goodnight, and may the Lord be with you.